Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And boy, oh boy, do we have a good story behind the book I'm going to be talking about right now. It is, well, I got exhausted just reading this book. It is so interesting, and I'm so happy to welcome Marianne Boer to Joy on Paper. And the name of her book is The 20, One Woman's Trek Across Corsica on the GR20 Trail. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, good morning.
Whoa, I got tired. I don't know how you did this trek. I mean, it is incredible.
Thank you.
Amazing. And then you get to write this wonderful book because you are a very observant walker. You don't just walk, you also notice everything. My goodness gracious. I mean, I would be chugging along, breathing hard.
I wouldn't care about anything.
But you're looking at nature and you're looking at trees and you're looking at, and you're noticing things, which is what makes this such a fun book.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, it's one way to take your mind off of, you know, what your lungs and your legs feel like. Just looking around and trying to, you know, remember what you're seeing and doing.
Well, let's tell the people what this trek is and where it is. Of course, most people I don't think could find, well, most people can't find Europe on a map. Let alone Corsica. And most of the people who are going to be interviewing you for this great book have never been to Corsica, but I have.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, you have.
Because.
Oh, wonderful.
Because I am a Napoleon nut. I have over 200 books about Napoleon.
Oh, my goodness.
Going all the way back, I think one of my books is 1820 is my oldest Napoleon book.
Wow.
So you can imagine that I had to make that journey. I just, you know.
You had to go to his birthplace, yes.
I had to. It's just, as a matter of fact, the wonderful thing, my husband was in the military, and now he's Israeli, so he didn't really care about Napoleon, but I had been obsessed with Napoleon since I was a kid, and so I could travel all over Europe. All I had to do was tell my husband there was a battlefield, and he would take me. And then when I said, I want to go to Corsica, I need to go to Corsica. I have to be there.
Yes.
We had a wonderful time, but I must say we traveled first class in those days. You took a whole different attitude. So first tell everybody, how long is this trail?
Well, it's 124 miles, which might not seem so daunting if it's just, you know, a straightaway, but it involves, you know, pretty much every day going up to the peak of a mountain or a pass and then coming all the way down and then doing it again for 2 weeks.
So how many people try this trail every year?
You know, I have that stat in my book, and I believe it's 18,000, but only about 50% actually complete it. They have every intention of completing it, but they just don't. They don't. So
this is not your first book about trekking. Obviously, this is something you've been doing a long time. So tell us the start of it, and then how you started trekking, and about the book that you wrote about your gap year too.
Yeah, well, I started trekking just because I've always loved the outdoors. Even as a kid, I loved being, you know, in the forests and in the woods, exploring with my siblings. And then, you know, my husband and I did some serious hikes when we were in our early 20s. And then we did mostly day hikes while we were raising our children. And then once, you know, we had an empty nest, we really started picking it up again in terms of more difficult and longer treks. So, yeah, we'd always done, you know, a lot of day hikes with our kids. And we took them along once they were in their late teens for longer treks. But that's how it all started. And we really felt the need to mark significant milestones in our lives with doing something adventurous. And oftentimes that involved doing long hikes. The gap year that we took was something that we promised ourselves we'd do. When we were about 23, we weren't married yet, but we knew we'd be married, and if we had kids, we promised ourselves we will do a year of traveling. We'll just take a gap year. We'll quit our job because we'd done it right after college. We did a good 2-month trip, backpacking trip through Europe, and we said this can't be all there is. We have to promise that we'll do it again.
And here you are, you're approaching 60, and most people are thinking about retirement, sitting on a porch and putting their feet up.
Right.
And you get who got this idea? Which one of you said, oh, whoa, let's go?
Well, you know, it actually happened at the same time. I would say I'm usually a little bit more of a risk taker. But we, during our gap year, we met a retired British general, a big, very fit man, who, when he heard we were doing the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is about an 8-day trek around the base of and the foothills of Mont Blanc, he said, "Oh, if you guys can do this, and if you enjoy it, you have to do the 20 on Corsica." And I'd never heard of the 20 before. Of course, I knew about Corsica, but I'm a Francophile and have been for a very long time. And I knew about the GR system, which in French, really, the words Grande Randonnée really mean big hike. And so we said to ourselves, we want to do, we'll do the GR20. I mean, the general told us we should do it, so we have to listen to him. So, yeah. But I'm usually more the driving force behind these adventures, and my husband almost always says, sure, let's do it.
So. Well, any hike, of course, is also a logistic problem. You have so many things to plan, what you're taking, the research in advance, and, of course, in your case, you also decided to join a group as opposed to just doing it yourself. So tell us how that came about.
Well, we're great trekkers, but we had heard how difficult the GR20 was, and we heard that in many cases it isn't even a trail. You're just scrambling over rocks for a mile or two, and so the trail isn't super well marked in places, and the last thing we wanted to do at 60 years old was get lost. So we just decided, let's just do it so we can enjoy it and not stress about finding the trail, staying on the trail. And so, yes, we went with a group and a guide.
Well, and I think it's better, you know, if you get injured out there by yourself and there's only two of you, it's always like, I don't want you to leave me alone and go and look for help.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I've been on a little walk like that, and something happened, and I really did not like that I had to be the one to take off, and my girlfriend fell, and I had to go and leave her, and I didn't know what, you know, you like. I never did that again.
Sure, that's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So how did you meet up with your group? How did they tell us about how many were there? And tell us about, you know, this is there are different dynamics once you're working with a group.
They're absolutely dynamics, yes. And thank goodness, for the most part, everything with our group was really good. We had a French guide, and there were, so the whole group was eight, including the guide. There were two women, and there were five men, and we were from the United States. We were the only ones living in the United States. There were other folks from Britain, and an American living in Ireland, and a man from the Netherlands. And we ranged in age from about 35 to 70. So we were, there was quite a range there. I guess our guide was 36 and had done the hike, dozens of times. We got along really well, and I was thrilled when I found out there was another woman. And we hit it off really well. We're still in touch. We're still friends. And my husband Joe found one gentleman from England who he, again, really hit it off well with. But everyone, we ate dinner and breakfast and lunch and everything together and shared a lot of laughs and stories. And it was great camaraderie.
So where did you fly into, and how did you get to the island?
Well, we actually went to Iceland first, and then we went to the south of France to do a month of training before. We'd done lots of training in the months prior in the U.S., but we did some serious hikes in Iceland, got to the south of France in the Alps just above Nice and, into the mountains there. We did many hikes, and then we took the ferry from Nice over to Bastia, Corsica. And for some reason, it just always seems that when we approach a place by ship, I don't know, there's something just, it enhances the anticipation and the romanticism and all that. We were so happy we chose that way to get there. And then after the hike, we stayed in Corsica for about a week, to rest, took the ferry over to Italy, and then did some traveling over there. So again, just by ship, is our preferred means of travel. But it was, there's daily ferries that go to the island.
Yeah, and we flew in on private airplane. Now, our trip was, I will tell you, we were going first class. we lived it up for the time that we were there. It was just wonderful. Tell us, I enjoyed, of course, the being in Corsica because of Napoleon, and because I'm very, very knowledgeable, I was able to speak to them, and of course they loved all of that.
Right? Yeah, so, I bet.
It was just so much fun. But how did you feel about the Corsican people, and what was your interaction with them when you started the trip and during the trip?
I wish we had the opportunity to interact more. But it was pretty much just in the before the hike in an inn that we stayed in, and then after we treated ourselves to a really nice hotel for 3 days of rest. So we interacted with some Corsicans then. We met a couple on the trail, and I met one when I went off by myself in a restaurant, and they were absolutely lovely, absolutely lovely. And because I speak French, it was most Corsicans also speak French besides Corsican, and some Italian. So I was able to converse with them, and they were lovely. But I know in their culture and their nature and what they're taught. I mean, they're very, as I'm sure you know, they are very independent. And they consider themselves Corsican, and you just really, if you really push them, they'll say they're also French. But they like to think that they're, they're very independent. And Corsica really does have its very own culture.
Oh, definitely. And you're right. You just keep calling them Corsican, and you'll always get a second helping of everything.
Yes.
And free drinks. The food is extraordinary. I don't suppose you got that. Well, what did you eat on the trail? How did you, what exactly, how much did you carry poundage-wise of each of you?
Poundage-wise, our packs were about 35 pounds. I mean, we really stripped down to the basics. You know, we had essentially two hiking outfits that we would alternate because at the end of each day we'd wash them on and, you know, have it dry. We had a little something, I had a little sundress. My husband had a pair of shorts, you know, for evening when we were having dinner. Very basic dinners, very simple dinners, but they were absolutely delicious. Some of them were Corsican specialties, like veal stew, and we had a lot of bread and desserts, simple desserts, but made with chestnut flour, because there are chestnut trees all over the island. We had a lot of pasta with, you know, fresh vegetables mixed in. So kind of just high-carb, stick-to-your-ribs, kind of food, and there was always wine and beer.
That's true. Well, you know, I think it's so inspirational what you did, and I love very much the quote that you have right in the front of the book, and it's really something I've been talking to people a lot about. One of the things, of course, I've been happy that in many ways Joy on Paper has been great for authors, because not only do I get to review their books, but I also encourage listeners, and quite a few of my listeners have written books now, and many participated in NaNoWriMo. They're starting to realize that it's so great to leave a record behind for yourself, for your children, for your great-grandchildren 100 years from now. You know, everybody's always looking now for DNA, where they came from. But if you write a book, I mean, you're leaving something solid. And just the attitude of not giving up, of actually getting out there and doing something with your life. I like very much how you wrote about Dylan Thomas. What did he say?
Dylan Thomas, I don't have the all these quotes memorized, but let me see. The one that was in the very beginning of the book, he was about the dying of the light, you know, to rage against the dying of the light, and basically
don't go gently into the night. Fight it, man.
Exactly.
Out there and do something. And
exactly.
And that's what people have to do, because there are too many people, I think, too many people who are retiring. And unfortunately, one of the things that now I really think it's terrible that so many people are turning to, sort of soft kind of ingestibles that maybe make them feel calm, but that's not the way to go. Get out there and do something. Live your life. Have fun.
Right.
I mean, you guys at 60, most people would, I mean, teenagers wouldn't do this trek. You know,
it's all about your passions. You know, I think that in many cases, the things that you loved as a young person, sometimes you have to give them up in the middle of your life when you're, you know, in your building your career, working hard at your job, raising your children, you know, being on the PTA board, whatever. And then when you have some time back to yourself, discover those passions, whatever they be, whether it's hiking or painting or, I don't know, scuba diving, you know, why not continue? I mean, it's you now have time, so you have to, like you said, go live life. But discover sometimes it's like remember what those passions were.
And grab on and do something. If you wanted to do something, for example, I love blacksmithing. And mm-hmm. one of the things I, because we lived in Texas a long time, so I had a chance to do that. And I tell people, if you are frustrated, if you have anger issues, if you have just get out there and go to a blacksmith and learn how to make things, you know, with iron. And boy, it makes you feel so good. And you're so proud of yourself when you make these beautiful things out of iron. Do something.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, use your creativity, use your energy, use your brain. And it's also a good way to meet people. But yeah, you can't just around.
Yeah, well, it is true. I mean, in your case, you've made friends, and friends that you have something to share, and a lived experience, which is always fun.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and for those who want to write about it, the great thing, you know, about whatever the passion is, the great thing is that you kind of get to relive it all.
Yeah.
You know, if you write about blacksmithing or whatever that activity is, you really get to think about it and why you love it, and you get to just, even if you're not doing it, you're writing about it, so you're re-experiencing it.
And now, and you get to share it with people too, because you can go and do book events, book signings, talk to ladies clubs and sports clubs,
right,
and just have fun. Again, you
yes.
meet more people and you have
mm-hmm.
a more interesting life, because I'm sure
right.
there are so many organizations that would love you to be a speaker because you are an inspiration.
Right. I mean, there, you know, people are interested to hear what other people are doing, and yeah, it can light a spark. It does.
I'm sure that when you talk to groups, and if I would recommend to all women's clubs, you know, instead of just sitting around gabbing, mm-hmm. invite Marianne Bohr,
right.
and she will not bore you, because she's got a heck of a story to tell, an exciting story about the 20. It's one woman's trek across Corsica on the GR20. Trek, and I tell you that you are such a good writer. I love the way that you write. I love your observations. Very, very fine writing.
Oh, thank you so much. That makes me so happy.
And I think you've had a lot of fun with this, and I hope, what's your next big thing?
Well, our next big hike is, it'll this time next year, we're doing the coast to coast across England. It's a well-marked route, and we walk somewhere between 10 and 15 miles a day. We're taking our dog with us, and we are staying in inns along the way. We're not camping this time. We're going to be a little bit more comfy.
And you will be drinking a lot of beer along the way.
That's right, exactly. Okay. Hopefully the inns will be right above a pub.
Oh, they always are. Absolutely. Okay.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Marianne, you have a website?
I do. It's www.marianneboer.com. No middle initial C, just MarianneBohr.com.
B-O-H-R, okay? She's not a B-O-A-R or a B-O-R-E. She is a B-O-H-R.
I hope that. Definitely. Right, exactly.
Really,
exactly.
Really a fine book. It's called The 20. People, get this book. It's a great read. It's inspirational. And Marianne, you're inspirational. And we'll have you back
you.
Here after you finish that trek across England, okay?
There you go. Okay. Thank
I look
you
forward
so much.
To it. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good talking
now.
To you.
Bye-bye. Great. Bye. Ooh, ooh. Now that is doing something. Okay, we're going to have a book buzz from Devon Miller and a few words from sponsors who are so kind to me. And then I've got a great guest coming up.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The library is one of my favorite places to visit. So many books by so many different authors. But what happens if you take every word from a book to heart? Well, you might just find yourself in a lot of chaos, like a certain family did in the book called The Library, written by Amanda Perlstein and Howard Perlstein, and illustrated by Marin Amini. The Library is a rhyming tale that tells a story of a family reading books that are filled with lies. They find themselves swimming with alligators, eating candies like vitamins, and getting blasted by their neighbor. It all leads to the question of, if something is in a book, could it actually be true? The idea of the book came about when Howard realized that library sounded the same as if it was spelled library, like you're telling lies. Around this time, he realized the term fake news was going around a lot and saw that people believed whatever aligned with their viewpoints, no matter if it was unrealistic or not. It led to the idea of what the consequences might be if one were to believe everything they read. After writing a draft of the story, he emailed it to his daughter Amanda to ask if she could make his story any better. The result turned into a hilarious story that the whole family will enjoy. Just make sure you don't go to a library that has books full of lies to pick up your copy. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Robert McCaw. The name of his book is Retribution, and boy, oh boy, is it a good book. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you? Nice to talk to you again, Patsy.
Wow, we're up to book five. It's
book five.
My goodness, you know, I just celebrated my 8th anniversary, and you've done all of this in that time, because I started off, I remember the very first time I read your first book, and I was so impressed with it, because the funny thing is, you know, it was Death of a Messenger was the first book, and I am one of those rare people who never had any interest in Hawaii. For some reason, it just never occurred to me to even, you know, bother to take a trip there, other than maybe I wanted to see Pearl Harbor. But after I read your books, I found it so fascinating. There's so much depth. There's so much to learn about the island and about the people. And you bring it all to life. It's just, your writing is so, so fine. And I was just thrilled, you know, when I got the first book, the second book, and you keep them coming.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Death of a Messenger, because for Kindle readers, they can get that book free now on Amazon during the month of June.
Wow, people, take advantage of it, because you will love that book. As I said, the minute I read it, you know, I always love to get the first book in a series. Well, because you don't always know it's going to be a series. If the first book doesn't work out, they don't give you the second one. But I read that and I said, not only is it going to be a series, it's someday it's going to be a series on television, because you just came out with a great character. Tell us about Kuakane and who he is and why some lucky actor is going to be playing him someday.
Well, you know, Koa is the protagonist in the book. He's the chief detective in Hilo, Hawaii. So he's a cop, but he's a cop with a very interesting background, because as a teenager, he believed that an overseer in a sugar mill had actually planned and executed his father's death. And he took to following this overseer, tracked him to a mountain cabin, got into a fight with him, and killed him in the course of the fight. Rather than fess up, he decided to cover up this crime or accident by staging a suicide. And lo and behold, it worked. And so he is a cop who has a criminal past. That's one of the things that drives him, motivates him to find and catch and prosecute killers. But at the same time, he has this insight into the criminal mind, especially that aspect of the criminal mind that covers up the crime, which, of course, most criminals do. And so he has this insight into their thinking, which makes him a more perceptive and more effective police officer. So he's a really interesting character. He's also Hawaiian. And that's important because one of the things I've tried to do in these books, and I think you've kind of encapsulated it, is Hawaii is a character in the book. It's a character through the details about its geography, its crazy history of conflict with the United States, its culture, its language, its politics, even its weather. All of those things go into making the island of Hawaii, which is also known as the Big Island, a character in the book. And different books in the series feature and focus on different aspects of the Big Island. Retribution, for example, focuses on Mauna Kea, one of the largest volcanoes. I'm sorry, Mauna Loa, one of the largest volcanoes in the world. South Point, which is the southernmost point in the United States. Punalu, which is one of Hawaii's black sand beaches. And, of course, the Thurston Lava Tubes in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. So in each case, I explore a little bit of the history and try to bring those places alive.
Well, you certainly do. And, you know, Hollywood has been in love with Hawaii for years, all the way back to Leon Uris and Magnum and Hawaii Five-O. But none of them have ever really captured the Hawaiians, the way that you do. No, none of them have this great respect that you obviously have for the Hawaiians. The stories that you tell in all five books are just great stories. And they are also different, about different aspects of Hawaii. You bring in the lore of Hawaii, the people, how they think, what they feel, what they eat, the real Hawaiians. And that's why I think your books, they spark something in me that I finally sort of felt, yeah, this is just a worthy, you know, subject to investigate. And so I was thrilled with your book, the first book, and now with this new one. And people will learn things about Hawaii that they don't know. Like, you can ski in Hawaii.
You can ski in Hawaii. One of the things that I really care about is a lot of the shows that you've mentioned on television deal with what I think of as the tourist Hawaii. Waikiki, palm trees, hula girls. What I try to do is capture the real Hawaii, which is this incredibly ethnically diverse place. It's geologically diverse. It's got its own separate set of problems. I mean, it was a separate country for over 100 years before the United States just grabbed it and took it in expropriation, which has led to a sovereignty movement out there, and all of these things, they're of great interest to me, and I want to share them with readers, and I basically chose this mystery format, or thriller format sometimes, to showcase the island and the people.
Well, you can always tell a really great writer, and whatever you sort of genre you take, if you take a cozy mystery or you take a thriller, and you have it filled with interesting characters who really give the story's depth, and all of your characters are multifaceted, and they're interesting, and as you have this great respect for the Hawaiians, including using some of their language in the books, which nobody else has ever done, I don't think. I thought, it's a combination of being respectful, of being generous-spirited that you are, and you tell these wonderful stories, and you get to include also your love of astronomy, which I really enjoy that part, too.
Well, it's one of those places in the United States where there are truly dark skies, and you can really see the stars. And I think sometimes about the ancient Hawaiians who traversed 2,000 miles of hostile ocean, and they finally arrived at this oasis in the middle of the Pacific, and they probably saw snow and ice for the first time, because they came from a very tropical climate, and on the top of Mauna Kea at 14,000 feet, or Mauna Loa, close to that height, you get snow almost every year. Sometimes they get blizzards up there, and as you mentioned, there are people who snow up there. One of the other things that's kind of fun to see sometimes is that some of the Hawaiian residents will drive up to the top of Mauna Kea or close to the top when it's snowing. They'll pack their pickup trucks full of snow, and they'll race back to the beach so they can build a snowman on the beach.
Well, that's why your stories are so interesting. You know, they're interesting to everybody. And I want, particularly, you know, you have these twisty plots, and I love this. Tell us about this one, because this book, of course, we have a murder, but explain the sort of the plot for this book.
Well, this book is in many ways a roller coaster of a crime, and what starts out as an effort to kill a police officer in Makanui, who survives the attack, and to frame Koa's brother, Ikeka, for a murder he didn't commit, snowballs slowly into an attack on the whole law enforcement community, on the prosecutor, on Koa's wife, or not his girlfriend, and on his lawyer. Series of attacks grow, Koa begins to perceive that he is the real target here, and that this crazy set of attacks is not going to end until he faces down whoever is behind this. And of course, that's one of the great mysteries in the book, is who is behind it. And it ultimately comes to a pretty dramatic conclusion in one of my favorite places on the Big Island, the Thurston Lava Tube in Hawaii National Park, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park.
It's a great ending. And what I also love in your books is that you talk about places, real places, like restaurants and places that people can go.
Absolutely. Actually, one of the thrilling things about being an author and writing these books is that people have come up to me and said, you know, I went to such and such a place when I was in Hawaii, and I felt like I was there for the second time. That's a real tribute to the author, because I captured something that is real about that place. whether it's one of the covered sidewalks in downtown Hilo, which kind of have their own atmosphere, or the top of Mauna Loa, which has drawn historical expeditions from the first time of Western contact to Punalu, which is one of these black sand beaches. It's a beautiful little beach. Everybody thinks of it just as a beach, but it has a history, and it has a unique environment. I try to capture that aspect of it. The same thing is true of South Point. I mean, it's a very interesting spot. It's probably where the first Hawaiians landed. There are some ancient fishing sites and shrines there. But it also played an important part in the lead up to World War II. There was an airstrip there. It was the refueling point on the flights from the West Coast to the Philippines or to other places in Southeast Asia. And again, I try to bring that history in so that people appreciate that this is a very complex and very interesting. It's an interesting place.
The thing is, now, I don't know, has somebody optioned it yet?
I'm waiting every day.
You're waiting every day. It's going to come. Okay, the call is going to come. Because, Bob, you're just such a great writer. And as I said, because of this great respect that you have for the Hawaiians and wanting to tell their story and wanting people to understand them better, I think you have a great winner in this series. This is book 5. You're going to be doing it for a long, long time. When you get picked up, will you do me a favor? And announce on Joy on Paper, because I don't get a lot of breaking news, but that would be a real scoop for me, for you to come on and say, breaking news, and it is that you've been picked up and they're going to film this, because first of all, they're going to love filming this. The diversity of the plots and the different crimes that are involved and all of that, it makes it will stand out from all of the other programs that people have seen about Hawaii. And you're right, the other ones are all the tourists, and which is why I never wanted to go there. I never had the slightest inclination of going over there and with all those hotels. That wasn't me. This is me. This is what I love. And I do feel like I'm in Hawaii when I'm reading your books. So will you do that for me? Will you do breaking news right here on Joy on Paper?
I would love to do breaking news on Joy on Paper. That would be fun.
You've been so
supportive of the books, and I appreciate that. So I'm looking forward to that date.
I think I might have gone there around the time of book 3, but then this pandemic thing hit and nobody was traveling. But I'm going to get there. I think you'll end up being like, people go to Hemingway's house. Everybody comes here to Florida. They go to the Key West to visit Hemingway's house. You have to look forward to once they take this and make it into streaming video and it becomes a big hit. People are going to come over to Hawaii and look for your house.
As they say sometimes, from your lips to God's ears.
Now, you don't have a beard, right? Have you grown a beard?
No, I don't.
Huh? Well, maybe you have to do something. Something. Do a mohawk so that people will... I don't know. They'll want to look like you, because you are just a fantastic writer. It's going to be, as I said, a wonderful series when it happens, and it will happen for you. I'm 100%. I was sure of that. I think around page 10, I said to myself, "Am I in a movie?" I said, "I'm not in a movie. I'm reading a book." But I was sure I was in a movie, and you're going to have, and I don't know if there's a Hawaiian actor right now famous enough. Well, they'll make him famous, because you have to have a Hawaiian actor for this. This is a part that some Hawaiian guy is going to just love.
Well, that's important, as you pointed out. It's a part of my respect for the Hawaiians and for their culture and for their language. I mean, if you sit in an audience and listen to a Hawaiian speaker, it is a marvelous lyrical language. And it's even if you don't understand it, it's almost like listening to music. I'd love to see that on the screen.
Me too. The real Hawaii with real Hawaiians who, you know, I think you have the flavor for it. You have the right attitude, the right everything, and it's going to happen for you. I know that. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to keep pushing it because I want somebody in Hollywood to realize they've got a winner on their hands. And now this book is called Retribution. I love it. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story. Very complex. Lots of fun. And it's by Robert McCaw. And you have a website. Do you want people to go to?
www.robertdmccaw.com.
Okay, people, get this book, and the one that's free on Kindle is for June, right?
For June, Death of a Messenger.
And that first book, as I said, right there, page 10, you know that you're going to love this author. And Bob, it's always a joy to talk to you, and I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. Did you finish book 6 yet? Or you're working on it?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
I know.
But thank you for having me. Thank you for having me on. It's a really wonderful way to communicate with you and with readers, and I really appreciate it.
Well, we love you here at Joy on Paper, and we're looking forward to having you back here to break some news for us, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Bob. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. This is a great mystery. I mean, he is so good. He's such a great writer, and it's called Retribution, and you will love it, and it's lots of fun. Yep, definitely, you must get this book. Now, today is June 6th, and for many of us, well, I would say for tens of thousands of Americans, perhaps hundreds of thousands of Americans, they know where a member of their family was 79 years ago today. 79 years ago, I know exactly where my father was. I know exactly what he was doing. Over the years, it was very hard to get him to talk about D-Day. That greatest generation, they did not talk about D-Day. They just did it. For them, D-Day was a do-it day. They did what they had to do. I know one thing I will be doing today. I will be rereading one of my favorite D-Day books, and it is by a local author, Tim McGee, and it is called Worthy McGuire. Now, I love this book because, you know, I read a lot of military books. I've read so many books about D-Day. But sometimes, you know, first of all, a lot of them are very big and thick, and sometimes they're maybe overwhelming just because the tragedy of what happened there. That people, you have to understand, 11% of the Allied forces died. I mean, it was a horrible thing what happened. And what our brave soldiers faced. So I would love to recommend Tim McGee's Worthy McGuire. It's about a vet, World War II vet, who made a promise on D-Day. He made a promise that he wants to keep. And his family's not crazy about it. He's old. You know, he's an old guy now. But he wants to keep this promise. So he decides to take a trip from Detroit to Normandy, and he needs help. He needs his family's help. They're not really all that keen on it, but eventually everything falls in place, and they get this wonderful, wonderful family dynamic that was missing from the beginning of the book. And you will love this book, Worthy McGuire. It's a worthy book, And there are more coming because the character of Worthy McGuire is so... Again, this is a book that should be made into a film. I would love to see this made into a film. It's a Hallmark kind of warm-hearted story about D-Day with not too much blood and guts because, you know, it's just many of our greatest generation who stormed those beaches 79 years ago today. For me, it's always a heartbreaking day. I think of my dad so much. I was so lucky. I was so lucky. He was so good. Great man. And always, always just stood out among men because he always stepped forward, and that's why he was called No Danger Al. He would walk in front of his men, because he's the oldest in his troop, and he'd walk in front of his men down a road, and he would always be out front looking for a landmine, and he would always turn around and look at his men, and he'd say, "No danger," and they would follow in his footsteps. So I want to play this song for him, and all of us should remember D-Day and remember our families and be grateful for what we have.